This is the Joe the Eclectic Podcast 2024, Episode 2. Welcome, everybody. Welcome. This is our part two of the year 1981. The releases that were done by groups in 1981, the albums they released. In that first part, we looked back and saw that Rush's Moving Pictures was released on February 12th. We saw actually Styx Paradise Theater was released about a month earlier on January 16th. Phil Collins, his first solo album, Face Value, that was released. That's got In the Air Tonight with probably one of the most famous drum riffs in the history of rock and roll, as well as Rick Springfield's Working Class Dog. That also came out in the first part of 1981. We covered albums that came out from January through April of 1981. Now, bear in mind that a album coming out does not automatically or instantly create a memory for me. I'm only speaking for myself now. But it just because the Rush's Moving Pictures album came out that February 12th, that doesn't mean I have a memory of listening to it or something happened during my listening to it right there on February 12th, February 13th. It didn't work that way. Probably doesn't work that way now. There are, as time goes on, then you create the memory with the album. For example, after I graduated from high school, which was 1982, that summer before I went off to college, I don't know, somehow I got invited to a bunch of parties the nights after graduation. Don't know how. I wasn't a popular kid in high school, but I guess I knew people who were hosting these parties. And one time I'm at a party there in Biloxi. It's about 4 o'clock in the morning, and this house was playing Rush's Moving Pictures from track one all the way through the end, I think track eight or nine. But to this day, I still remember sitting there in this house actually near the beach. Wasn't the nicest house around, but just sitting there listening to Moving Pictures, the whole album. And that was kind of fun. So we've gone through the May, April releases. In 1981, for most of 1981, since my birthday is in December, most of 1981, I was 16. And in the first part of the year, I was finishing my junior year in high school. And so I was working as a dishwasher at a hotel, basically across the street from the beach, across from Highway 90, on the beach, basically, and riding my bike to work, and all that good stuff. Didn't have any overhead. Mom wasn't making me pay rent, though. Probably didn't enter her mind. Had it, she would have. But it was good. Not really a lot of complaints about my life in 1981. In fact, Teenage Joe, which is what I'll call myself here, but Teenage Joe in March of 1981 may or may not have lost his virginity there on the campus of Emory University in Atlanta during that spring break. Not going to confirm or deny that, but it was a pretty eventful year. Again, getting back to the albums, some pretty pretty strong albums were released in 1981. So let's pick it up in June of 1981. The Commodores came out with In the Pocket, and this was on June 22nd, 1981. This is the last album with Lionel Richie as a lead singer. Now, I had a copy of the Commodores' Greatest Hits album that came out, I believe, in 1978 or so. So Lionel Richie, after this album, would spin off and do his own thing, and similar to Phil Collins in the middle to late 80s, you couldn't probably couldn't go 5 minutes on listening to the radio without one of those two guys' songs from their solo albums pop on. And so they were everywhere, but back then in 1981, Lionel Richie was known only as the lead singer of the Commodores. A couple good songs that made it had airplay on from this album. First one is "Lady, You Bring Me Up." Let's take a listen to a little bit of this one. So that was the first hit that I heard on the radio from this last album with Lionel Richie as the lead singer. It was good Commodores stuff, if you will. Their second hit was more in the mode of Three Times a Lady or Still. It was ballad-esque, if you will. And it's called Oh No. So those were the two hits from that album. I'm not a big Commodores aficionado, so I don't know how the albums, how In the Pocket compares to their other albums. My only exposure to them up to that point was that Greatest Hits album, which I really liked. I actually still listen to today. But this one, don't ask me why, for whatever reason, I bought it. I had it on cassette. I did not have the actual album, but I did buy it on cassette. and so was able to play it. And I actually may have worn it out, but sometimes cassettes didn't really last all that long. So that was my tough luck. So we move ahead a month, a couple of weeks actually, to July 3rd, 1981. Foreigner came out with Four, the number four, Foreigner Four. Last podcast, I talked about pinnacle albums of a group. I do think, because I had Foreigner, I had all their stuff I had up to this point. I had Foreigner, Double Vision, Head Games, and now Foreigner 4, this being their fourth album. And I think this is probably their pinnacle album. It had a lot of hits. It has a lot of good, I would dare say, great songs on it. Sad to hear the news about Mick Jones and his battle with Parkinson's now. That sucks for him. So obviously, I wish him the best. But this album very strong, and I think it still holds up. So one of the first, and again, I'm not doing this in the way they were released, but one of the bigger hits that they had on this was Jukebox Hero. Sounds a little bit like this. I think the song still holds up. Not to keep harping on it, but Foreigner released their first album in 1977. And so this is, I mentioned it's Foreigner, it's Head Games, Double Vision, and now Four. And so it's now 5 years later, 77, 78, 79, 80, 81. 5 years later, as I just counted on my fingers, 5 years later, and this is their fourth album. So they're basically doing one a year. The first hit off this album was Urgent. It's funny, and I can't remember. Oh, it was I was commenting to my wife last night as we're watching a commercial, and Don't You Forget About Me by the Simple Minds is playing. And I told her back in the day, had there been a song on a commercial that was popular at the time, a popular song at the time that became part of the commercial, oh my gosh, as a fan, I would have been all over my band. Oh, you guys sold out. You've gone commercial. Oh, how could you? What is going on? Nowadays, I'm actually glad for Simple Minds. I hope they got paid handsomely for the use of Don't You Forget About Me. Urgent is another song that was on a commercial a few years ago. And again, like Simple Minds, I hope they got paid handsomely for it. It is a good song, and this is what it sounds like. So I've never seen Foreigner in concert. Never saw them as with their original lineup. If I remember correctly, they didn't tour a whole lot, or if they did, they didn't come through Biloxi. Or if they did, I didn't go see them. But I would have gone to see them, I believe, because I liked their stuff. Obviously, I had their first five albums, so there must have been some attraction there for me. Probably their biggest hit off this album was a ballad, one of those stadium rock ballads, just like Journey came out with in their Escape album, which we'll talk about here in a couple minutes. But for Foreigner, this was their first. This may have been up to that point their biggest hit, and it's called "Waiting for a Girl Like You." And I want to sample a little bit of that. It's a slower song, as I just said, little ballad-ish. It's not a word, but it's a good song. It's a good song. And so let's take a listen to it now, as I'm having a little trouble with my board. So Foreigner would have at least one more ballad song later in the decade in the 80s that would be become a hit, but this was their very first ballad hit. Like I said, probably their biggest selling single up to that time. So that would have been a release of July 3rd. A week later, July 10th. Journey comes out with their Escape album. So much I could say about this. So many different memories. One of my top five favorite albums of all time. Gosh, I just it's I just I can't even begin to say enough about this album. What's funny though is that back then, again, you weren't able to sample every song on the album. You couldn't jump onto Apple iTunes and listen to the minute and a half of each song from the album. Even up to that point, record stores, look, Google that, but record stores would not allow you to listen to the whole album. Eventually, they did have little stations where you could listen to albums, but this is before then. So, really, the only way to hear the full album was to buy it. Of course, they would usually release singles leading up to the release of the album to get airplay. So you may be familiar with one or two songs of the 10, but you're kind of throwing the dice when you buy an album that you've only heard two songs of. So unless you really, 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 really like the group, back then it was pretty dicey to buy entire albums. And up to that point for me, Journey had not gotten into the status, my status of I'm going to buy the album because I love the group and I'm going to buy it regardless of whether or not I've heard many singles from it. They would get to this status with this album for me. Heart being the other one, I would buy a Heart album only having heard maybe one song. So it's July 10th, 1981, a week after Foreigner comes out with Foreigner 4, and Journey comes out with Escape. First single that they got radio play was Who's Crying Now? Now, this is a 5-minute song, and this is probably the radio station's conditioning us to really, this seemed like a long song to me, but 5 minutes is not that long. But we, the listening audience, we were used to shorter songs. So 5 minutes, wow, that was a long song. But this was a good one. And this is some of what Who's Crying Now sounds like. So it has a pretty long outro, but this was the first song, the first hit from Journey's Escape. Now, I had seen Journey in April of 1980, the year before. Actually, I saw them on Friday, April 18th. Don't ask me why I remember the date. I just do, partly because I remember the week before, Friday the 11th in April of 1980, I saw Heart. And so on consecutive Fridays for Teenage Joe, he saw Heart and Journey on back-to-back Friday nights. I mean, that there wasn't a whole lot that could beat that. So again, Escape comes out in 1981. They had just released Captured earlier that year, the live album, the double album that was live, had a couple new songs on it. On the heels of their Departure album that they had released in 80, Evolution in 79, and Infinity in 77. And these are with Steve Perry. Journey had been around before that, but for me, I didn't care about what they had released before Steve Perry became their lead singer. So now we release the song which has become, thanks to The Sopranos, it's gotten a second life. Again, was not the first release, not the first single from this album, but the biggest song, what turned out to be in the one of actually one of the biggest songs ever in terms of sales. This may be, I think I've seen somewhere, this is the most streamed song of the 20th century. So I guess it's more than just the Sopranos bringing it back. You hear it, it's stadiums, and it's got a very positive message. I like the instrumentation. I think this is probably Steve Perry at his best. The writing is crisp. What's funny is that that concert I attended in 1980, the Babies opened for Journey, and the keyboardist for the Babies was Jonathan Cain. Little did we know that night that a year later they would be rele Journey would be releasing an album, and Jonathan Cain would be the keyboardist for Journey. Greg Rowley deciding to step down because of the grind of touring. So Jonathan Cain, Steve Perry, this is their first album collaborating. Came up with some really, really big hits. This would be one of them, the most streamed song of the 20th century, I read somewhere, and I believe it. It has just a lot of memories for me, not because of the positivity of the song or anything like that, but this is probably Journey with Steve Perry at the height of their powers. And I probably don't need to introduce it any more than what I've already done because the first part's so memorable, but it sounds like this. My fear is that because the song's everywhere nowadays, that it's been overplayed, overexposed, and I hate that for the song. I'm glad it's streamed so much, but I hate it for the song because it's a really good song. But I could see why people would be tired of it because you just hear it so often over and over again. This next song is not sure it got a lot of airplay. It's played a little bit more now on classic rock stations, but back then, I don't. It wasn't where I grew up. It wasn't a big hit. I sure did like it though, and it's one that Journey did a tour to support this album, and they actually made a DVD out of it from their show in Houston at the Summit in November of 1981. And on this same tour, probably about a week or so later, they played Mobile, Alabama. They didn't come to Biloxi, and that really made me mad. But they played Mobile, Alabama about a week after this Houston show. And I can't remember now why I didn't go. I think I might have worked, or maybe I was mad at them for not coming to Biloxi. I can't remember. Mobile's only about 50 miles away from Biloxi, so it wasn't that far, but did not go see him there. But on their DVD, their version of Stone and Love, not to go dark on this podcast, but As I'm Dying, the version from the Houston show 1981, this song is what I want to pass away to. So since we're not talking about the DVD, we're talking about 1981 and the release of Escape right now, we're going to listen to Stone and Love, which I love this song too, and the live version, but here it is off Escape. Song really speaks to me probably more now as an adult than it did back then, because when he's talking about his younger years, well, I was only 16, so I really didn't have a whole lot of younger years before me, but it speaks to me, and even to this day, it's one of I just love it. Thinking about riding my bike to work. I didn't have my first car till I was in college. So for some reason, when you don't have a car, you don't have the ability to to listen to radio. So I kind of had to play things in my head. But this was a song that played over and over in my head on the way to and from the Ramada Inn. This next song is on the second side. It's actually right before Open Arms, which we're going to listen to here in a second. But I think it's been Steve Perry's voice has been described as an instrument, and how he used that instrument to play off of Neal Schon's guitar licks. And I think this is this last part of Mother Father. If you hear him in the background, and he couldn't have, probably even after the Frontiers album came out, he probably couldn't do this bit, but he did. They actually, again, on that Houston DVD slash CD, it's on there. But this is the last part of Mother Father, and listen to Steve Perry's voice in the background. I get it. I mean, his voice is either something you really loved or you couldn't stand back in the day. I was one of those that was in the former. Loved his voice, hated what was happening to it. As you could hear from album to album, it gets a little scratchier and scratchier. But this may be the Steve Perry at his peak power. So the one song, and I've seen the band members interviewed about this, Open Arms. If you listen to this album from front to back, it doesn't fit entirely perfectly with the rest of the album. It's a little bit or a lot of an outlier, But we talked about Foreigner waiting on a girl, waiting for a girl like you. Open Arms was an even bigger hit than that. And it, especially around Valentine's Day of 82, it was if back then you could request songs. What the tracks weren't already predetermined, but you could request songs. It was one of, if not the most requested song for Valentine's Day back in 82. Now, I did not have a Valentine, but that's neither here nor there. But here is Open Arms. So that closes the chapter of Journey's Escape album that was released on July 10th, 1981. Again, I could probably do an entire podcast about that album, about just Journey with Steve Perry and the run they went on. So we move forward to July 27th, 1981, a few weeks later. And Stevie Nicks had been part of Fleetwood Mac. She and Lindsey Buckingham joined the group, and they released their first album as part of Fleetwood Mac in 1975 with Fleetwood Mac, the self-titled album. Then a couple years later was probably, not probably, was their Fleetwood Mac's pinnacle album, Rumours, in 1977. That's one of the 40 million sold club albums, and it holds up too. Then they released a double album, Tusk, in 1979, which is pretty good. It's at the time people compared it to Rumors. They were expecting it to be a Rumors version number two. It wasn't, and it didn't. It was not a commercial success. I liked it. Still do, and it's a double album. Still will play it from back to front to back, and it also's got some Christine McVie songs on there. May she rest in peace. But anyway, so now we fast forward to 1981, and back then, if somebody like Phil Collins, Stevie Nicks, this is her first solo album. If you have somebody like that spin off and do their own solo album, is like, oh no, are they leaving the band? Is the band breaking up? What's going on? What's happening? Well, Fleetwood Mac is still around with Stevie Nicks, so safe to say that from 1981 to 2024, even though she has done several solo albums, she has not left the band, though Lindsey Buckingham has. But anyway, so we go to July 27th, 1981. And Stevie Nicks comes out with Belladonna, and it's really a darn good album. And so the title track of this album is called Belladonna, And it sounds a little bit like this. Not the first hit off that album. I'm not even sure it got airplay, but it was it's a good for a title track. It's good, and actually it's the first song on the album, which is a little odd to make your title track the next one. But Stevie Nicks kind of has a voice a little bit. And I'm not comparing the voices, but I'm comparing perception. But the Steve Perry, there are people that love her voice, think it's great, and there are people that can't stand it and think she sounds like a goat. I'm a little bit down the middle on her. I mean, I've got a couple of her. I've got this album, Belladonna. I've got her follow-up album to this, the solo album, whose name escapes me at the moment. But liked her in Fleetwood Mac, liked her solo stuff. It's funny, I saw her at Starplex in Dallas. Oh gosh, this was probably late 80s, early 90s. I'd have to pull up my ticket stub to see how much I paid for a ticket. I probably paid, I don't know, $30, which back then was a lot. But she's touring again, touring with Billy Joel, and I haven't looked, but I have a feeling that if I wanted to go see her, it would cost probably a whole lot more than $30. So the first single from this album was released. It's Edge of 17. Now, if you saw the movie School of Rock, and there's a scene with the great Joan Cusack, who's one of the most more, if not one of the most underrated actors in Hollywood. I love everything she is in, but there's a scene where she is really inspired, shall we say, by this song. She does a great job, and it's hard for me now to listen to this song and not think of that scene in the diner with Joan Cusack, but this is Edge 17 with Stevie Nicks from her first solo album.
And the things go bad, that's grand.
So there are a couple of duets on this album that she did. And again, this is how things were so different back then. This next song, Stop Dragging My Heart Around, is with Tom Petty. I never knew until years later that they had actually dated. And so, had I known that Tom Petty could get somebody like Stevie Nicks, probably would have picked up a guitar and learned how to play that instead of a trombone. Probably get better class of women doing that than playing a trombone. But back then, I didn't know. I had not heard. It was easier to keep things quiet and private than it is today. But yes, they did date. I'm assuming they dated somewhere around the time that they made this duet. But it's a good one, and it's Stop Dragging My Heart Around. Wow, that's good stuff. As I'm sitting here listening to these songs, and yes, I probably have them on with my 1981 glasses, though I didn't wear glasses back then, but I probably have a little bit of nostalgia attached to them. But many, if not most of these songs that I'm playing, I'm listening to, and they don't sound dated. If you played Open Arms today on the radio on in Dallas 106.1, if you played that song, didn't say who it was by or anything, but if you played it today, I think it would be as well received as it was back then. The point being, I don't think it sounds dated. I'm listening to Tom Petty and Stevie Nicks here, the late great Tom Petty. And I'm not, it's not screaming out to be 19, this is 1981. The other duet that came off this album that got a lot of airplay, I had a love-hate relationship with. Again, being a teenage Joe the Rocker, he didn't like slow ballad type songs. Drippy, sappy songs he was not a fan of, but in a way he loved it because it had good lyrics. Fast forward to I believe 2018, 2019, whatever Don Henley's 70th birthday is, he put on a show down at the American Airlines Center in Dallas that we went and saw, And as a special guest, Stevie Nicks came out and they performed this song. So loved it and thought it was good. But I got to be honest, at the time when it come on the radio, it kind of drained my life force a little bit when I heard it. But as the years have gone by, I've come to respect it and even like it. Leather and Lace, Stevie Nicks singing a duet with Don Henley. So what's funny though with Don Henley for me is that he, I believe, started out at Stephen F. Austin in Nacogdoches, but transferred, ended up attending North Texas in Denton, what was then North Texas State University, which is where I graduated. And he lived in Bruce Hall. I had a friend of mine live in Bruce Hall. I actually had a couple different friends live in Bruce Hall. And Bruce Hall was the dorm for music majors. And at the time, this is in the, when I was there, it was the middle 80s. When Don Henley was there, it was the early 70s. But at the time, it was not air conditioned. The other thing about Bruce Hall was that, and I forget what they call it, but it's not finals, but whatever the music college equivalent of finals is. If you lived in Bruce Hall, you could practice 24 hours a day during that time. There was no not practicing your instrument if you're preparing for whatever the equivalent of the finals are. So yeah, Bruce Hall was a very interesting very interesting place. And it was kind of cool. So but it's funny to it's funny for me to know or to realize that walking around Bruce Hall, hey, you know, Don Henley lived here, and that's kind of cool. So now we go to August 21st, 1981. Willie Nelson. Now I knew who he was. I knew a few of his songs, but he came out with a greatest hits and parentheses some that will be album. And this was really my exposure to Willie on a more grand scale, if you will. And listening to this album again, I bought this one on cassette. Don't know why I remember that, but I did have this one on cassette. But he had, let me state the obvious, he had and has some really good stuff. One of the songs off this set, we'll sample some of them. Blue Eyes Crying in the Rain is really a good one.
Never meet again. pages I'll remember. Blue eyes crying in the rain.
That's good stuff. He didn't actually didn't write that. Fred Rose did. But one that Willie did write, which I had not heard until, I'm sorry, he did not write this one either, Whiskey River, my mistake. One that he performed on this album, this Greatest Hits album, which again, country music fans in the 70s would be yelling at me saying, oh, of course this is a great song. Of course, why haven't you heard it? Well, I didn't listen to country music back then. Really still don't, but certainly appreciate that era of music and those songs. And so for Willie, we had another song off of here that was called Whiskey River, which is very, I mean, it's, I won't say the quintessential country song, but it's pretty close. Let's listen.
I'm drowning in a whiskey river, bathing my memory, mind, the wetness of its soul. Feeling the amber current flowing from my mind. Whiskey River, take my mind. Don't let memory torture me. Whiskey River, don't run dry.
So that would be Whiskey River by Willie Nelson. Again, not sure the original album it came on, but for me, I'm getting exposure to his songs through his Greatest Hits album that came out in 1981. Now, one song that I had known of and was familiar with is Mama, Don't Let Your Babies Grow Up to Be Cowboys. And that was and still is. It's a really good song.
Mama, don't let your babies grow up to be cowboys. Don't let them pick guitars and drive them old trucks. Make them be doctors and lawyers and such. Mama, don't let your babies grow up to be cowboys. They'll never stay home and they're always alone, even with someone they love. Cowboys ain't easy to love and they're harder to hold. And they'd rather give you a song than diamonds to gold. Lone Star belt buckles and old faded Levi's, and each night begins a new day. And if you don't understand him and he don't die young, he'll probably just ride away. Mama, don't let your babies grow up to be cowboys.
There's something to be said for the simplicity of the lyrics. And I don't mean that in any bad way, but I mean the lyrics are very simple, very basic, but they certainly convey a message, I think. And it's very descriptive. It tells a story. I'm not sure that somebody like Luke Bryan could come out with something like this today. Maybe Chris Stapleton could, but some of the more Toby Keith could have if he had, was still around. Unfortunately, he's not. Another song, but I'm just saying that Willie was in the right place at the right time for with the right music to really become a country and western icon. One of the other songs, two more songs we'll listen to from this album. One of the other ones that I really like is My Heroes Have Always Been Cowboys.
I grew up dreaming of being a cowboy and loving cowboy ways, pursuing the life of my high-riding heroes. Burned up my childhood days. I learned all the rules of a modern day drifter. Don't you hold on to nothing too long. Just take what you need from the ladies that leave them with the words of a sad country song. Heroes have always been cowboys, and they still are unseen, sadly in search of, and one step in back of themselves and their slow-moving dreams. Cowboys are special, their own brand of misery for being long, too long. To die from the cold in the arms of a madman, knowing well that your best days are gone.
Boy, I tell you, as I've gotten older, it's hard to. Hard to realize, knowing your best days are gone, in the sense that you're not going to live however old you are. You're not going to live that. You're not going to double your age in all likelihood. If you're 60, you're probably statistically you're not going to live to 120. So yeah, it is. You see your mortality definitely, definitely. So I'm sure. He is tired of playing this. I would be, but it continues to put money in his pocket, so sometimes you do what you got to do. That's a catchy tune. On the Road Again. So it's funny, I do think of him, Willie Nelson. If you drive through, if you drive on I-35 from Dallas to Austin, you'll see the sign for Abbott. Actually, there used to be, over on the right as you're heading to Austin, there used to be a gas station that had these three huge frogs on the roof of it, and they were each playing an instrument. An homage, I believe, to Willie. But something happened. There was a tornado or something. I can't remember exactly what, but they're not there anymore. But I do think of him every time I drive through Abbott. And unlike some towns, there's no, it doesn't say, home of Willie Nelson. It just says Abbott. So, but you know that that's where Willie is from. So, and to his credit, he's still touring. I'm not sure if I'm 90, I want to be doing that, but God bless him. It probably keeps him alive. So, the next album released in 1981, we go to August 24th, just a few days after the Willie Nelson Greatest Hits album was released. But Rolling Stones' "Tattoo You" is released, and this is a follow-up to their Emotional Rescue album that they had released the year before. Off that album were the hits Emotional Rescue and She's So Cold. But this was probably a somewhat of a comeback for the Stones. I think this was their best-selling album that they had in quite a while. This next song, Start Me Up, you still, I think, here in some stadiums around the country. I remember back in the day at Reunion Arena where the Dallas Mavericks played when they first became a team from the middle to late 80s. This was the song that they would play right before tip-off. And so, and I still remember in the section we were sitting, there's a guy a few rows below us that would dress up in the player's shorts and the shirt and the tank top, the uniform of the Mavericks, and then he had his headband. And once he heard the first few chords of this song, he'd stand up and wave the towel. And I don't know if that guy is still with us, never got his name, but I think of that almost every time I hear this song. But there, near the end of the song, there's a very shocking lyric that we'll listen to now. All I can say is, I want to meet the female that can do that. Again, for the day, it was very very racy, but and I think some stations would kind of they would censor it. You really couldn't hear it. But if you bought the album, which I did, I have the album, you would be able to hear those lyrics. Another song that became popular from this album is "Hang Fire." It's a short song, only a little over a couple minutes, but it's a very, very intense song. I like it, I guess, because I can be intense, but it sounds a little something like this. How can you not like a song where he says marrying money is a full-time job? I don't need the aggravation. I'm a lazy slob. Hang fire. I mean, how do you fault that? So there's a song on here I don't believe got any airplay on the radio, but and again, as I've on some podcasts I've done previously, when I talk about music. Sometimes you get an album home and you listen to it from front to back, for the first few times. And there's a song on there that doesn't get on the radio, didn't get on the radio, but it becomes your favorite track, one of your favorite tracks, something that may be overrated. For me, that song on this album is Little TNA. Now, back then, TNA stood for tits and ass. It was more of a television term because in the 70s, it was very, think TV was very conservative. And so you didn't see cleavage, you didn't see cheeks of a woman's butt until the Dukes of Hazzard with her name escapes me right now. I think she had a birthday today, but the Daisy Dukes that she wore, that was kind of the first time back then that was allowed on TV. So, of course, Teenage Joe is going to like a song called Little TNA just because of the title, but this is what it sounds like. There you have it. This is why Teenage Joe liked that one line in there. The title, of course, and then the one line. Another memory I have with this, actually, in this entire album is my mom remarried in July of '82. We were on the Mississippi Gulf Coast. He was living in Dallas. They would have a long distance relationship where she'd fly out to Dallas not every other weekend, but she, often once a month or so, if not more, and leave me a 16-year-old at home to fend for myself, which was okay. Ended up seemingly working every night she was gone. But anyway, so she thought it would be a good idea because I hadn't really met this guy that. He was driving from Dallas to Biloxi for the wedding, and so I flew out to Dallas. Loved the town immediately, almost as I stepped off the plane. Just thought it was the best town, still do, by the way, but thought it was the best town out there. And so he and I and his best man get in a car, and we're heading out of town, out of downtown, and over on the right's the Cotton Bowl, and that was a pretty big deal to me because I'd watched so many Cotton Bowls through the years on TV. I was like, wow, yeah, this is pretty cool. Here it is. Anyway, so we leave, I don't know, about 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And 3 hours later, we are in Shreveport, Louisiana. And we're at, it may have been a TGI Fridays. It may have been a Houlihan's. I don't remember. It was one of that genre of restaurants. Anyway, the restaurant is playing this whole album from front to back, which is unusual for restaurants to do. But, again, this is late June, early July of 1982. This album came out, had been out for about a year, and had some good airplay. This last song we're going to sample on this album is Waiting on a Friend. And I always liked it, but it got a lot of rotation on MTV. The video did. And it's probably their last hit from this album. But it's Rolling Stones' Tattoo You album, Waiting on a Friend. So another part of the video I remember is I think it's Charlie Watts. I can't remember. One of the members is sitting on the steps of an apartment building. This is looks like New York City or one of the boroughs, Brooklyn, maybe Queens. Anyway, but it also looks like the same street scene that Oscar the Grouch from Sesame Street used to live on. And that I always kind of thought that was funny. But it's a good video. It's a good song. Again, I don't hear it being dated. You in my opinion, you don't hear that song and say, "Oh yeah, that's a song from the early '80s." I don't hear that. Maybe it's there, but I don't hear that. So now we're moving on. A week later, September 1st, 1981, Hall & Oates, and they've been around since the middle, been popular, I should say, since the middle '70s. Had a lot of good songs, hits. Very radio-friendly group. Daryl Hall and John Oates. Hate what's happening to them now, but it happens. But they come out with Private Eyes. Now, the year before, in 1980, they released an album called Voices, and that had "Kiss on My List" and "You Make My Dreams Come True," or "You Make My Dreams," excuse me. And they did a cover of "You Lost That Loving Feeling." So a year later, they released Private Eyes, and again, the and that I guess that was more common back then, but the first song from that album on side one is the title track, Private Eyes from Hall and Oates. So that song got airplay. This next one also got airplay. It actually maybe was a bigger hit than Private Eyes, and it's "I Can't Go for That." I kind of like it. It's funny again, invoking the memory. So my mother would go to Dallas. She would fly out in New Orleans. And New Orleans is about an hour and a half away from Biloxi. She would fly back on a Monday morning and arrive, I don't know, around 8 o'clock in the morning, maybe a little bit earlier. And so one of the drawbacks for me having a complete run of the house, as well as complete run of the car, be able to drive anywhere I wanted, anytime I wanted while she was away. The drawback was, though, you got to pick her up at the airport Monday morning early, which means I'd have to get up at, I don't know, 5:30, whatever it was. But for a 16-year-old to get up at that time was very tough, very tough. And there were many times that I would walk up to the terminal area as she's getting off the plane. I mean, there was no time for sitting around having a cup of coffee, which I don't drink, but no time having a cup of coffee. I walk in and she's getting off the plane, and we turn around and head back to Biloxi, and she drops me off and goes to work. But a lot of times, listening to the AM radio, because that's all our car had at the time, listening to the AM radio, a lot of songs from this album would end up being on that, being played on the radio as I'm heading to New Orleans at an ungodly early hour for me. Don't know why, but this song, "I Can't Go for That," really, really goes well with driving to the airport at on a Monday morning at 7 or 6:30 in the morning. Again, a 5-minute song. Not used to that back then, and I had forgotten how long the intro is. It takes a long time to ramp up, but once it gets going, it's a good song. The last hit that I remember from this is called "Tell Me What You Want." There's another song I liked on here as well. Where he talks about some men call their moms every day, but "Tell Me What You Want" was the other hit that got radio play. Again, going back to the video era beginning, MTV has just popped on the air a month before this album came out for Hall & Oates. And you see their Private Eyes video, music video, Not, yeah, the Duran Duran had nothing to worry about these guys taking their airplay on MTV in terms of music videos. They were very, very basic. A couple of weeks after Private Eyes came out by Hall & Oates, Dinah Ross came out with a Frankie Lymon and the Teenagers remake of Why Do Fools Fall in Love. Now, I include this not so much because it was such a groundbreaking, great album, but what was different about this is that, and I don't know how old Dinah Ross was in 1981, but in the album which I have, there was a fold out, including the album sleeve, but the fold out of her wearing Jazzerwear, like a leotard, I guess is what it's called, but it was what you used to do aerobics. That's the word I was thinking of. It's an aerobics outfit, a little bit similar to Olivia Newton-John in her physical video the year before. But yeah, that was for her, Diana Ross at that time. Again, she wasn't in her 20s back in 1981, but for her to pull that off, which she could and she did, that was pretty amazing. And so I really don't remember why I bought this album. I did like this song and this next song that we're going to play, but and I don't think for her discography, easy for me to say that it was one of her top selling ones. But there's a couple songs on there that I like, and as well as the pullout, Teenage Joe got a big kick out of that. First song that probably the only song that got airplay was Why Do Fools Fall in Love by Diana Ross. So I think a pretty good remake of the original song. In some ways, it actually may be better than the original song. That doesn't always, in fact, it rarely happens, but I think she does a really good job with it. It's funny because right around this time, first of all, Teenage Joe's about to enter his senior year in high school. The month before, in August, his girlfriend had cheated on him, so he's trying to get over that. Trying to get over that hurt, and then this stupid single gets released, and he's thinking, boy, that's pretty appropriate here, isn't it? The next one that got radio airplay from this album, which is titled Why Do Fools Fall in Love, is called Mirror Mirror, and it's really pretty good album, excuse me, pretty good song, original for Diana Ross, but second song that came out.
You have
So, and I've said on other podcasts, and I truly believe it, but time does not diminish greatness. This album that she, Diana Ross, released there on September 14th of 1981, this is on the heels of her Diana album that was released in 1980. And that song, still there are artists, I believe it's artists today, still sample that album, which is great. Now, unfortunately, this podcast is about 1981, not 1980, but again, she's cranking out the albums, she's cranking out the hits still, and had a long has and had a long, long career. So we move ahead, month of October 1981, Queen comes out with a greatest hits album, October 2nd of 1981. I was familiar with them. I remember their first big hit here in the States that they had in the middle 70s, A Killer Queen. I thought that was a cool song. Didn't know who they were. I had to call the radio station to see who it was because never heard them before, but I did like that song. And I always thought it was also unusual that, and I still do. I always think it's unusual when a group or a performer puts their name in their song. Jason Derulo, more recently, did that in seemingly every hit he had on the radio. But back then, it didn't happen a whole lot. So Robbie Van Winkle, aka Vanilla Ice, can certainly thank Queen for coming out with this. This was a new song that they featured David Bowie on, and had not been released yet. They actually Queen, when they released another version of this Greatest Hits album, they did a live version of it as well. But this is and the very first part of this is you only have to listen to a few seconds to identify or be able to identify this song. Certainly one of the more memorable licks in rock and roll in rock and roll history, and again, Vanilla Ice really used that to launch his, and I'm holding up air quotes, but to launch his career. But he took advantage of it, and good for him. He's actually went to I believe Richardson or Richardson Pierce here in the Dallas area. Though he tried to pass himself off as being a street, had a bunch of street cred, but not sure that was quite the case. So now we go to a couple weeks later, October 14th, 1981, Prince. Prince releases Controversy. And again, he had not made it big yet. I had a classmate that used to listen to him. I Want to Be Your Lover did make it on the airwaves a few years prior to that, but he at that time was not what he would become. especially after the Purple Rain movie and soundtrack. But this is 1981, not 1984. So he's still pretty unknown, kind of unknown, but certainly didn't stop him from coming out with funny and racy lyrics and racy songs. So of course, Teenage Joe's all over that. He loves that kind of perverted stuff, if you will. And so the title cut controversy has a pretty funny segment of lyrics that we'll listen to. That wasn't the part of the song that I thought I was going to play. There's a part of the song that he talks about tourists with their pocket cameras, and he says, "What, no flash again?" And it's actually pretty funny. But how many songs out there actually contains the Lord's Prayer that are on albums ever? Probably not a whole lot. So that was, pardon the pun, but that was rather controversial as well. So he, as we know now, he was not one to shy away from, not one to shy away from controversy or anything like that. Another song on this album, which I bought the album, but another song is Do Me Baby. And it's a 7 minute song, almost 8 minutes. And it's very erotic at the end. And you just, I'm not going to spoil it for you, but I do want to give you a snippet of it just to kind of get your interest going. So what I like about him, and I'm going to sound like an old man, don't mean to, but what I like about him is that he's able to convey a raunchy message, if you will, and really not use any profanity. And, you're having to use your imagination somewhat, but again, it's pretty straightforward. There are straightforward lyrics as well. As I said a minute ago, the ending of it is very shocking, very graphic, not with words, just the whole visualization of what's going on is pretty interesting. Another song that just didn't get airplay, understandably so. You might remember when we were talking about the beginning of 1981 in part one, January of 1981, President Reagan was sworn in, so he's just kind of getting his feet wet in office. And people forget today, the USSR, Russia, was a threat to us, and they wanted to. I mean, their goal of communism is to take over the world, and they were communists. Ergo, their goal is to take over the world. And if somebody's standing in their way, then so be it. They'll have to crush them. So there was the Cold War, and it was a very real threat. Maybe not as real as it was in the 60s, but still in the early 80s, as 19 the 80s are just getting kicked off, they're still out there. So this song, all podcasts have been talking about how these songs don't sound dated. Now I will say this one does, but I still like it. It's a short song, but for Prince, he had to make a political statement, and this one is Ronnie Talk to Russia. So very controversial lyrics there. He's making his statement, but to reiterate, the threat of the USSR back then was real. It was out there, and it was very tense. Not comparing it to the 60s or even 70s, but still, it was out there. It was real. It could potentially happen. The last song on the album of controversy by Prince is Jack and the letter U and the word off, Jack You Off. So up to that point, really I hadn't heard anything like that. Teenage Joe was enjoying the undertones, or maybe overt tones, of a sexual nature in the music. And Prince with Controversy certainly did not disappoint. I mean, who I had not he we had not heard any song with the title Jack You Off up to that point. So he's talking about a girl, doing that to a girl, which at the time I did not know was even possible. But apparently it was. And good for him that he was going to provide that much needed service to relieve her. And he'll do it for a worthy cause, which I cut him off. But anyway, so that's Prince's controversy. Really good stuff on here. Came out in 1981. He was not as big as he was going to get. A lot fewer people knew who he was, but for those of us who were lucky enough or smart enough to buy this album, it is a winner. And I think we'll stop here for this part two of 1981. We've covered everything from the middle of, excuse me, late June to the beginning of October. And as you've listened, there are a lot of albums that came out during that time that were really impactful. Very, very impactful. So we'll end there. We will pick it up with part three with the rest of 1981. Plus, we'll do some kind of a potpourri of bands that had a couple of them had debut albums that year that may not have been that strong at the time, but they certainly turned out to be that way. Have any questions or comments? Hit me up. I am the Eclectic Joe. It's my Twitter handle, my Instagram handle. The email address is theeclecticjoe@gmail.com. So, until the next time that we pick it up, that's really all I have for today. And we will speak to you next time.